Closer and closer, the soldiers moved, methodically slashing at weeds and shrubs with bayoneted rifles. It didn't take long for the soldiers to reach the front edge of the gully where David and Elsa pressed their bodies into the cool, damp earth, as though in the midst of a twisted, horrific dream. David frantically considered the options that were available in such circumstances. They could just continue to hide in the ditch and hope for a miracle that would prevent them from being stabbed or shot by the approaching bayoneted rifles. Or David could stand up with his hands raised and plead for Elsa's life in exchange for his own in a demonstrative act of chivalry, like he had seen in the movies. Perhaps the soldiers had seen one of those same films as well and would know that their part would be to now honor such bravery by letting the girl go. David's racing thoughts felt completely ludicrous to him. Yet, they continued. Do Nazis take time out from waging wars and running extermination camps to go to the movies, to catch the latest Hollywood films? He thought not. Anyway, they probably had their own type of movies, where they conquer and defeat the innocent and helpless time after time. So many useless thoughts were flying through David's head. But in the end, he saw clearly that there was really nothing that could be done except to lay there. The soldiers pressed on, and soon they were just about 3 feet away, less than the length of their weapons, close enough for Elsa to count the number of hobnails protruding from a boot as it crushed down, just inches from her head. David and Elsa's eyes locked onto one another as if to attempt some sort of final pathway for a soul-to-soul communique of farewell. Suddenly, a loud whistle blared out from the armored car that was about 20 meters behind the approaching soldiers. To David's ear, in the moment of this distraction, he thought he heard what sounded like a game whistle, reminiscent of the signal at the end of a soccer match in which he was undoubtedly on the losing side. He braced against the earth for whatever was to occur next. An officer emerged from a hatch atop the armored vehicle and shouted to the soldiers. He barked excitedly.
"Radio orders from command headquarters! Report to regiment immediately! The Americans and British have landed at Normandy! The invasion is on!"
At which point, without further discussion, all of the soldiers ran back to their vehicles, got in, and sped away, apparently in unanimous agreement that, at least for the moment, defending against the much-anticipated D-Day invasion would necessarily trump any sport hunting for Jews and gypsies. Elsa and David still lay there in the gully as though frozen from the trauma of near death. Internally, they were both asking themselves questions such as, "Is this really over? Are we still alive? Or is this just the way a violent death behaves, with the mind manufacturing a charitable alternate ending that's nothing more than a false replay of the last moments of life?" But in the quiet stillness of aftermath, as they both drew deep breaths, there was no denying it. They were alive. It just took time for their extraordinary fortune to sink in. Still cradled there in the muddy ditch, they began to smile at one another. First, they were only able to manage thin, crooked little smiles, but the pencil-like lines gradually broadened to resemble quarter moons. Finally, Elsa broke the silence and whispered,
"Happy birthday, David."
He started laughing uncontrollably, and he could barely get his words out to reply,
"Thanks, Elsa, but would you mind wiping the mud off your face before you talk to me? You look like you just came up from the grave."
"But I did, David."
"Oh, I did. And so did you."